something else pretty amazing happens. Okay. Can you turn it off in here, though? Subal, can you do that? So it plays there, but not here? I think we'll have something amazing happen. We'll just stick with this volume. Maybe the last day we'll be able to cover some other things. But what I'd like to do after we finish this volume is go back and review everything. So that when we walk away, go back to our respective temples in service, we'll all know something about at least this much of the first canto. That's okay. It's okay. Yeah.
I'm sorry, getting back to the question of the grade, are you going to give a final exam?
I will. What we'll do is, I'll tell you at the end of the class, as we go on. I plan to give a multiple choice, fill in the blank type of exam that you can all grade yourselves. But in order to do nicely, you have to be prepared for tomorrow's class. You have to be attentive in class tomorrow because the exam is going to be based on what we discuss in class tomorrow. And we're going to take the exam at the end of class tomorrow.
Oh.
It'll be easy. Please open your books to Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text 7, which is found on page 346. Anyone in the class does not have one of these volumes. You don't have one. Okay, well, you can listen, but as far as preparing, you're going to need one. And I have them in the car. Oh, there's one. Okay. So we'll start by reading this verse. Translation: simply by giving oral reception to this Vedic literature, the feeling for loving service, loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. So like we discussed in class this morning, the miseries, as explained in chapter 2, are illusion. They're false. They're within the mind only. And the real position is the natural position of the soul in the soul's eternal relation with Krishna. So that illusion is dispelled, or the miseries of material existence, they are dispelled. No competition from the children here. So we can say, simultaneously we're saying two things. In other words, that the absorption of the mind in material existence is terminated because the mind is absorbed in the soul's actual identity as being an eternal servant of Krishna. That difference of absorption is created just by the hearing and chanting of the topics of Krishna. Then another thing we're also saying, and that other thing is that devotion to Krishna springs up at once. They're not unrelated, but they're distinct points that are being made. Because this devotional service to Krishna is, of course, one of the answers to the questions. What is the most essential teaching presented within all of the scripture? Devotional service to the personality of Godhead is the most essential teaching or duty to be performed. Well, if it's the most important thing, how do we get it? By hearing the topics of Lord Krishna being glorified in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. So, one point, just from this, I'm taking this particular verse for a purpose, I'll explain. In the purport, Prabhupada expands the level of this verse immediately to a national, international, global, universal scope. That is, what applies for one applies for all. And in the verse it's saying lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness are dispelled. So what is the cause of lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness? It's identification of the self. That's been defined in two verses prior to this. What is the root of all illusion or despondency? He understood. Vyasa understood by the vision. Let's look at text 5. Due to the external energy, said page 342. Due to this external energy, the energy that Vyasadeva saw accompanying the Lord, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks of himself as a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. This is the root cause, Prabhupada says it in the first sentence of the purport, the root cause of suffering is identifying oneself to be a product of the material energy. And the remedial measure is also stated. So that thinking of oneself in the false way brings about lamentation, illusion, and fearfulness. So now jumping back to text 7, Prabhupada says that politicians since time immemorial, they've been calling for peace. But they'll never get it. He says emphatically, empirically, boldly, conclusively, never will they be successful with all their summit meetings, their holding of peace assemblies, the United Nations. Never will they, until they accept that they have an eternal relation with Krishna. Never. Never successful. It will always be a situation where one will be in the bodily conception and therefore fearful. There'll be one person who's in the material conception trying to dominate over another who's in the material conception and being fearful of being dominated over. The time that I'm making this point because it's a theme that Prabhupada takes a philosophical point and makes it an international issue. That nations, as it's true for an individual, it's true between individuals, it's true for groups of persons, it's true for the world. And if people want the right thing in the world, they have to establish what's good for the individual. Then in turn, it's good for everybody. And without it, it'll never happen. However altruistic one may speak, it will never happen. So, there are, from texts 4 through 10, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 7 verses. These 7 verses in the 7th chapter make up about half of Tattva-sandarbha of Jiva Goswami. Tattva-sandarbha is a commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam by Jiva Goswami, and it's done in a very unique fashion. He doesn't do it as Prabhupada has done it. The way that Prabhupada has done it is a more standard or classical way. What Jiva Goswami has done is he's taken certain verses and established those certain verses as exemplifying critical points within the Bhagavatam. So I'm letting you know that these 7 verses, these are the first of the critical verses.
7, 4 through 10.
Critical means, in order to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, it is essential that you understand these verses. It's critical. It's a life and death critical. No. Understand or don't understand based upon these 7. Yes?
So,
Tattva. T-A-T-T-V-A.
Sandarbha.
Sandarbha. So, There are several reasons why these verses are selected, and I'll give you a few of them. One of them I've already given. What's the one I just already gave? Yes. Yeah. What is the root cause of that suffering of living beings? In order to understand how to get rid of a disease, you have to understand what the disease is. Yes?
Identification with gross and subtle body.
Right. Text 5 gives the answer. The vision of Vyas is explaining it, or is revealing it. Text 5, and the purport of text 5, tells us what Vyasadeva understood from that vision. So, there's a couple of classical things, and I'm going to add some other reasons why these are chosen by Jiva Goswami in Tathasamgarbha, why they're so important, in other words. In establishing truth or existence or reality, you have to have some means of proof. Just like existentialists, they'll raise the question, how do you know anything exists? Right? You know about existentialists, right? Existential philosophers. So they're very intellectual, and they ask these ultimate questions. How do we know anything? There's conversations between Srila Prabhupada and such existentialists from France, where they couldn't go beyond. They wouldn't allow Prabhupada to take them beyond such questions. How do we know anything exists? How do we know even we're sitting here in the room talking with one another? How do we know that? So the Vedic response is there are different means of trying to prove something. So Tathasamgarbha is establishing the means of proving something. The Sanskrit is called pramana. P-R-A-M-A-N-A. I could write it on the board. Pramana. Means of proof. Means of knowing something. So in the beginning of Tathasamgarbha, he's establishing, Jiva Goswami is establishing that the Srimad Bhagavatam is the best means of proof. And this section of the Bhagavatam helps establish that Srimad Bhagavatam is the best means of proof. Why? Here's why. Vyasadeva, all of what we've read so far in the Bhagavatam is that Vyasadeva compiled all the Vedas. So, Jiva Goswami doesn't take the trouble, although other scholars take the trouble, to establish why Shruti is the best. So he goes through cursory arguments, but Shruti, or spiritual sound vibration, is the best means of knowing something. Sense perception is limited, reasoning is fallible. The best is perfect knowledge coming from a perfect source. Eternal spiritual sound vibration. So Vyas had just compiled all of that and was still feeling despondency. He received instructions from Narada. He went into a stage of trance, and in that stage of trance he had certain realizations. Based upon those certain realizations, this verse that I just read, he then compiled Srimad Bhagavatam. So amongst all of the Vedic literatures, Srimad Bhagavatam is the best. The cream, just like mentioned in class this morning. Amongst the milk is the cream. It's the mature fruit, the ripened fruit of Vyasadeva's realization. And we're hearing in this section what is the essence of that realization. And this particular verse that I've chosen, 7, text 7, it's emphasizing the hearing process, oral reception of Vedic sound dispels all illusion, all fallible features of this even Kali Yuga, not only a human being in Satyayuga, but a human being in Kali Yuga, perfectly and most successfully, the best means of proving something or establishing some, establishing spiritual reality. Another, found in the same section, so now we're, this is another specific reason why this section is chosen by Jiva Goswami from the Bhagavatam, is the Atmarama verse. Don't ask a question yet. The Atmarama verse. Everyone knows what the Atmarama verse is? No. Atmarama verse is text 10. So let's look at text 10. There's a whole chapter in Chaitanya Charitamrita on the Atmarama verse. In this section, Shonaka, text 9, Shonaka asks Sutta, why is it that why is it that Shukadeva Goswami was interested at all in the Srimad Bhagavatam? Please don't do that. Why was it that Shukadeva was interested in the Srimad Bhagavatam? You understand the question? Make the question more clear. Shukadeva Goswami was already at the stage of perfect realization in the Brahman conception. This means that he would not be interested in something mundane. But the topics of the personality of Godhead are discussed in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Persons, activities, variety, places, conversation, personalism is the topic of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Shukadeva Goswami was interested and attracted. Why was it that he was attracted? Was the question in text 9. So the Atmarama verse is the answer. Even perfect souls, even those who are Atma, Rama, fully satisfied within the self, like Shukadeva Goswami, having no attraction for anything material, that person is attracted to the activities of Krishna. Fully transcendental literature, in case there is some question. Fully transcendental literature. So, again, this is establishing the authority of Srimad Bhagavatam to state absolute truths. We're not in that position like Shukadeva, in the Brahma-Bhuta position, completely Brahman realized. So we may not be certain about our attraction, but knowing of Shukadeva's attraction, then it becomes very certain. Okay, I'll pause. Any question so far? Give it up.
Yeah, back up to verse 5. It discussed that the verse was explaining the root cause of suffering, but I don't see how the remedial measures, which are to be undertaken,
emotional service,
prevention, is shown in the verse.
You have to be Vyasadeva. He could see the cause, and therefore he knew the remedy, that he had just undergone it. And when he had that vision of the Lord, the form of Maya was behind him, under his full control. That's in text 4. From that, Vyas could understand living entities where the illusory, energy is before the Lord. They can't see the Lord because of the influence of that illusory energy. Under the Lord's full control, the illusory energy moves to the side so that the form of the Lord can be seen. Because the cause of the living entity's suffering is not being in that direct association with the Lord in devotion. Because one can only be in that direct association with the Lord in devotion. So the remedial measure is establishing that connection of devotion. Now, how to do that? Narada had given him the clue. Present transcendental vibrations, and immediately that Anato Pashamam Sakshat, the verse from this morning, those causes of so-called suffering immediately mitigated. In the higher stage of direct perception of the Lord in loving ecstasy is established gradually, progressively. That's text 7. Anything else? Another thing is, yes, Mother Kamala.
You're saying that mind, so that the mind can have transcendental engagement.
Yes.
Because it's a root cause of suffering. You also said that misery is an illusion.
Yeah.
So, except if one doesn't engage in sixth activity, but simply in the mind, I mean, I can't see how it's actually great suffering because within the mind, with a little imagination, one can have great enjoyment.
Sure.
But
that great enjoyment that one imagines is not real great enjoyment. One can imagine great enjoyment in darkness, or one can be completely fearful in a dark place. In both cases, they're illusory. But by turning on the light, or the sun rising, or illumination coming into that dark place, then one's real life is restored. Real happiness, simply the real happiness of the soul, is being in that direct contact with the personality of Godhead. And immediately that's established in that place by the recitation of the topics of Godhead. So one other reason that these topics, that these particular verses were chosen by Jiva Goswami in Tattva Sandarbha is explained by Akhiladhar's question and also from the previous verse that in this simple vision of Vyas, all kinds of relationships between the personality of Godhead and his energies are realized by him. Or Sambandha Gyan is established. The relationship of God with his various expansions, energetic expansions and personal expansions, is understood. So as, in other words, those who are monists can't get away with saying it's all one from these verses. Because the Lord is there, and distinctly, his energy is there, the living entity is another tattva, or another existence, another reality, that's also there, being described in some cases, or in one case is in an illusory condition, another case in a fully illuminated condition. These different existences are established in these verses, texts 4 through 10. There's, of course, you can read Tattva Sandarbha and get much more detail from this. And these points are from Baladeva Vidyabhusan, who made some commentary on Tattva Sandarbha. It's included right in the purports. And if you look through that chapter in Chaitanya Charitamrita, where Lord, practically speaking, Prabhupada's purport on the Atmarama verse here in Srimad Bhagavatam is a paraphrasing, in many cases it's word for word practically, of the verses of Lord Chaitanya's talks with Sanatana Goswami on this verse. Yes? Kusakrata has done something of a translation. And another copy is coming out with one also. Something that's a little more complete. Yes?
You also said that altruism will never work. But also, the Srimad Bhagavatam will never work. I mean, it won't always work either, right? Because not everyone will.
That was established. Yes, that was established earlier. This is one of our review topics. But persons, when the sages of Naimisharanya had gathered, their idea was they wanted to have a sacrifice for the satisfaction of Vishnu, with the conviction that by satisfying Vishnu, the ills of this age of Kali would be diminished. And there, the explanation was given in the purport by Srila Prabhupada that just as branches of a tree that are disconnected from the tree don't get water when you put water on the root, so sacrifice for Vishnu is that principle of watering the root. So a person's completely disconnected, then they don't get the benefit. But the process of hearing the topics of Krishna again makes connection. If persons give reception, and again even unknowingly give reception, there's great benefit. so I want to move along. Next verse that I'm going to pick up on is verse 22. Verse 12. I'm sorry. There's a very significant break in the whole first canto that comes right in the middle of the seventh chapter. It starts on text 12. That break is where Suta Goswami addresses the sages and starts to narrate the activities of the Pandavas. Just after this, right in the middle of the chapter, just after explaining this transcendental realization of Vyasa, there's been several chapters built up to it. Right in the middle of the chapter, he switches. Now I will narrate to you the topics of the Pandavas and Krishna, interacting with them, and so on. I'll raise the question, see if you can come up with the answer. Why is this so significant? Why such an abrupt change, and why is this, what's happening here? Yes?
To establish a personal conclusion of Krishna.
That's already been established in the previous verses very clearly.
The importance of vital term has just been established.
Yeah.
So now the purpose
getting underway. Okay.
Hearing the topics.
Right. Krishna appears directly, describing the activity of Krishna directly. Starts. Yes.
Is there any particular reason that you know of why this particular time and place and incidents were chosen to start with?
It has a lot to do with the meditating on the lotus feet of Krishna. And why I've raised this question in discussion with other scholarly god brothers, and no other answer came than that one.
You mean because of the Pandavas' dependence on the Lord?
Yes. There's a certain mood. I'll bring that out. I plan to bring that out before we finish the chapter. Arjuna starts off, he's put into the dilemma and starts offering certain prayers, and those prayers indicate his relationship with Krishna. Coming before the personality of Godhead in a certain mood, appreciating in full the actual position of Krishna, the personality of God who has come within this world for certain reasons, and he knew all of that, and yet he was in the relationship of friend. Okay, so now I want to ask another question, and that is, the Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes we hear people say this, that when, to them Srimad Bhagavatam means the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Whenever you see pictures of Krishna, you want to portray Krishna, it's Krishna in Vrindavan. Krishna with the gopis, Krishna with the cows, Krishna's a little boy eating butter and yogurt, Krishna with Mother Jasoda. So, why is this appearing, Krishna with the Pandavas? And specifically, how can we call this Krishna Katha? Yes?
Is there connected with Krishna?
Yes. Yeah. It has, your answer has direct relationship with the earlier question you asked about, aren't there certain people that won't benefit from the hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam? Prabhupada discusses this in the purport of this particular verse. Because the Pandavas are in relation with Krishna, hearing about the Pandavas is also Krishna Katha. Why? Because they're in relation with Krishna. Hearing about Kurukshetra battlefield, we don't care about battlefields. Out here in Pennsylvania, there's plenty of battlefields that karmis go to all the time on pilgrimage. Battlefield of Gettysburg and battlefield of this burg and that place and George Washington, and we don't care about such places, but we care about Kurukshetra battlefield. Why? It's in relation to Krishna. And hearing about the Pandavas is also Krishna Katha.
That's what you're asking.
Yes. 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 Go ahead.
Well, also, there's like
original Bhagavatam was spoken to Shiva Devas on his Maharaj Parikshit as a descendant of the Pandavas, said to bring us to the point of religion ending when we're here, the Pandavas left and Parikshit's life up in that point. So when I was reading through this, it was sort of like the next phase.
I can hear you bad enough, the people in the back can hear you.
It's like now we're going to hear how Maharaj Parikshit, his activities up until the point of hearing Bhagavatam. And it's like,
or book distributors or persons who are trying to in different ways broadcast the glories of the Srimad Bhagavatam topics. It's this taking the broken limb and putting it back in connection with the body of Krishna. Yes, we're short in time.
Well, just in connection with what he said about how it sets a scene for Bhara, actually it's a personal thing also why he picks this particular topic to begin with, in terms of how Dravacharya punished the womb, because it's dealing specifically speaking to Maharaj Krishna, and so to establish his connection in the scene of Krishna's pastimes and his direct relationship also, in his personal circumstantial reason for him beginning like this also, not just in terms of a general benefit for humanity, but also directly that he's dealing with Maharaj Krishna.
Okay. I didn't catch exactly what you were saying, but I'll say okay. Sorry, but I couldn't follow it all. My mind was also just thinking about, isn't it, what Parampara had previously said also. It's not the next verse, it's this very verse. This verse 12, another reason I wanted to point out verse 12, is it's stating what will take place up to the conclusion of this canto. Why this particular pastime? Charlie, this was your question? Because this pastime is introducing these topics mentioned in verse 12, including the departure of the Pandavas after Krishna's departure, or the topic of the renunciation of the worldly order, the kingly order, by the sons of Pandu. And that's where, and the grandson of Pandu. That's the topics. This is one sentence, and it's the whole rest of this first canto. So now I'm going to read another verse to try to cover the rest of the chapter. I'm not going to... Okay, I'll do the best I can. Text 22. Arjun said, "O my Lord Sri Krishna, you are the almighty personality of Godhead. There is no limit to your different energies. Therefore, only you are competent to instill fearlessness in the hearts of your devotees. Everyone," so now pay attention to this sentence, "everyone in the flames of material miseries can find the path of liberation in you only." So here's our theme again, mitigating material miseries. And what has happened from text 12 up till here is... it's described the battle of Kurukshetra is practically finished. All the soldiers are wiped out. Even Dronacharya, Duryodhan, he's smashed by the club of Bhima. And right after that, Ashwatthama sneaks into the tent at night of the Pandavas and takes the heads of the children, the sons of the Pandavas, cuts them off, and brings them to his master, Duryodhan, who is disgusted also. As bad a character as Duryodhan is, he couldn't stomach it either. So then Arjun finds out, he goes after Ashwatthama, the Brahmastra of Ashwatthama is released in desperation, and what does Arjun do? Here's the verse, here's what he does. He immediately starts offering prayers to Krishna. So I have several comments about this. Along with this point of noting everyone in the flames of material miseries, so this message, this Bhagavatam is meant for everybody, including those who are in the flames of material miseries, and Arjuna is saying, you alone can look at the Sanskrit in the text 22. Tvam eko tayamananam apavargo si samsrute. So, those who are in the clutches of material miseries, Eka, you alone, can provide Apavarga, the path path of liberation? Sangsrute, those who are suffering in this material world, you alone are their shelter. So we heard that philosophically prior to this chapter 7, text 12 verse, all the nice philosophy. Okay, now it's put to test. And Arjuna, who is Krishna's dear devotee, is the one who is being tested. Do you believe it? That when material miseries come, Krishna is the Eka, the only deliverer from that material misery? So, it happens again in this same chapter. That is, after Ashwatthama is finally caught, then there's another conflict situation. This is a conflict. Arjuna's life is in danger. The other conflict is after Ashwatthama is caught, he has to spare him and to kill him both. Not show mercy and show mercy both. That's a dilemma. So how to see oneself through different dilemmas? Krishna alone. So in one case here, Arjuna is offering prayers. Krishna directly tells him, now do this. And in the next dilemma, Krishna from without is saying, you have to do something because you've given your promise to Draupadi. You have to keep your religious principle in terms of your word, and also he can't be spared, but what Draupadi is saying is also true. You can't kill him. So now you figure it out. So from within, he gets the inspiration. Why? Because Arjuna has this quality that the Bhagavatam is trying to train in us to turn our attention to Krishna. And how? This is one way, by offering prayers. So I wanted to make the point that the prayers in the Bhagavatam are very, very important. Why are they very, very important? One of the reasons is, in prayers, the glories of the Lord are very clearly enunciated. So we heard in the earlier chapters that hearing the recitation of the glories of the Lord is the best means of deliverance. So these prayers are very good for hearing. And particularly focusing on and trying to enter into the mood and spirit of these prayers. Because they're offered by, there's another reason why they're so important. They're offered by perfect souls like Arjuna, particularly in moments of great calamity. Now what's going to follow in the rest of this canto is very trying, calamitous situations in different ways. Extremely intense emotional situations. And what do the devotees say in those situations, how they express their realization and their relationship with Krishna is packed with emotion and higher truth of the glories of the Lord. And another particular point about this section of Arjuna's prayers, which goes only for a few verses, but it very clearly indicates another point that we heard in earlier chapters, that is, remembering Krishna in some particular way, according to how Arjuna is remembering Krishna, what happens, according to how we remember Krishna, Krishna appears to us. Or Krishna reciprocates with the loving sentiment of his devotee according to that particular sentiment. So now let's see how Arjuna is calling out to Krishna. You alone can dispel fearlessness. He's invoking that capacity of Krishna to dispel his fearfulness. Because what is fear? It is preserving this body, which I'm not. So he wants to have that bodily conception dismissed, not just have the brahmastra stopped, and that's the cause of his fearlessness, but get relieved of his bodily conception. You are the original personality of Godhead who expands himself all over the creation and is transcendental to the material energy. And you have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. Again, it's indicating so many things, but Krishna is beyond the influence of the material energy, just like the Atmarama verse was establishing. So now here is Arjuna in this very intense situation, fully remembering that fact of Krishna. If only we could have such clarity of consciousness at the time of the calamity. So we have 10 whole minutes left. Text number 33. Arjuna, his eyes blazing in anger like two red balls of copper, dexterously arrested the son of Gotami and bound him with ropes like an animal. So Gotami, this indicates the wife of Dronacharya. It's significant, Gotami, Prabhupada points out in the purport, means that she was in the lineage of Gotama Rishi. So his mother was a Brahmana, Ashvatthama's mother was a Brahmana, and Ashvatthama's father was a Brahmana, Dronacharya. Exalted Brahmanas, respected by everyone, Brahmanas. But Ashvatthama was not to be respected. That's what Krishna says in two verses later, kill him. Don't show mercy. He's being treated by Arjuna like an animal, and Krishna condones the son of a Brahmana being treated in that way. The point I'm making is there's another aspect of these next chapters that come after the ones that we've covered so far. Many cultural points are being brought out. What is the normal situation in Vedic culture? Various cultural points are being described. And in text, just flipping back for a moment, in text 24, in one of the prayers of Arjuna, he appreciates that Krishna is completely beyond the purview of the material energy, and yet he's always acting within the four principles of liberation. He always acts within the codes of Dharma. So his action, this invoking of that feature of Krishna, is followed by Krishna saying that this heinous Ashvatthama is not to be shown mercy. So it's underscores the feature of Kali Yuga, that the Brahmanas are by birth maybe Brahmanas, but not by their behavior or by their action. So now text 40, we're drawing quickly to a close of the chapter, and then questions. Sutta Goswami said, text 40, although Krishna, who is examining Arjuna in religion, so that's the point I wanted to focus on, Krishna's, the whole purpose of this Leela, one of them, was Krishna to examine Arjuna. Or another way to say the same thing is for Krishna to show through Arjuna how we should see what is religious and what's not. We are also sometimes put into a situation where one way seems to be the right thing, or even the opposite seems to be the right thing, and we're in a dilemma. So the ultimate right thing is to turn to Krishna. And Arjuna passed the test. And therefore, Arjuna was then given the right understanding how to act.
What verse are we on?
That's text 40. So, zooming on to text 53 and 54, they're put together. The personality God at Sri Krishna said, all these rulings are in the scripture and you should act accordingly. You have to fulfill your promise to your wife and you must act also in the satisfaction of Bhimasena and me. I've already indicated Krishna is placing squarely before Arjuna a seemingly impossible conflict, unresolvable conflict. What to do? So in one case, the previous case in this chapter, in a case of distress, Krishna directly tells Arjuna. In this case, he doesn't appear to directly tell Arjuna. So there's even in Arjuna's case, with Krishna, the option of Krishna standing directly before him, it's not always that Krishna is going to directly tell Arjuna, now do this, or now don't do that, or here's the solution to the problem. But as Krishna's devotee, he has full confidence that that becomes possible. So Arjuna gets the inspiration, and he cuts off the hair and the jewel of Ashwatthama, and that ends the chapter. So what I would like to do in the next 4 minutes, besides answer some questions, is give you some indication of what class tomorrow will be like, so that I can end class on time and Bodhi Bhattaka can have a refreshed group of students when they come to walk in. What I'd like to do is review everything that we've gone over. For example, let's say if we were to start right now, if we had more time than we have, I would like to say, let's go back to the first chapter of Canto 1, and let's examine the construction of that chapter. So that the chapter 1 begins with prelude, Prabhupada identified. That's verses 1 through 3. So what's in that prelude? And then you can, you know, I'll write stuff down on the board as you say it, so we can all get real nice notes and real clear understanding and get real fixed in conception of what's going on here. Then next, so I'm giving you a hint of how we'll begin the class tomorrow. There are 6 questions found in chapter 1. Which verses do they include, and what are the 6 questions? So then the answer is it starts with chapter 1, text number 9. And it goes through verse 13. And then the last question is at the very end of the chapter, text 23. Okay, now what are those 6 questions? We'll write them on the board. Then what about the verses in between? There's verses 4 through 8. What about those verses? What are they offering in this book? Why are they there? What do they do for the chapter, for the message of Canto 1? Then after that there's some remaining verses, and what are they all about? What are the principal things we should recall in those verses? And then when we're done with that, we'll understand chapter 1 in a summary way, without all the details. And then we'll try to go through the rest in a similar fashion. Maybe it'll take 2 days to do that. So by the end of the second day, I'll have already made up a fill-in-the-blank, multiple-guess question. Exam. And you fill in the blanks and circle the A, B, or C. And then at the end, we'll just exchange papers with the person next to you. And then you can grade each other's papers as we go through the answers. And then we'll know something more than we did when we came here about this book. Mother Mahendrani? So I think Sunday. I'm always hoping we can do more than what we can do. So it'll, you know, we'll take 2 days to review what we did in 5 days. Yes? You're not there. So. Dr. Dave, you had a question before?
Yeah, well, I have two.
Okay.
One is, it says, like, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. And so right here, Krishna is saying that you should actually kill this person. But there are so many other, like, things, like, yeah, the duty. But wasn't the, one of the highest things have been to actually kill the person?
Well, what he did was he surrendered to Krishna. He did the highest thing. And by his surrender unto Krishna, Krishna from within gave him the understanding how he could fulfill both, kill and not kill. In that verse that I read, Krishna is saying, after, if you read carefully those verses, Krishna said, don't spare him, let him have it. Then Arjuna presented him to Draupadi. Draupadi said, spare him. And Draupadi's words convinced Yudhisthira and even convinced Krishna. The verses say. Then after that, Krishna says, okay, now you have to fulfill both. You gave a certain promise to me, and you gave a certain promise to Draupadi, and they're opposite. Now you have to fulfill both. You can't fail to fulfill either one. Good luck. So what he did, the highest thing. He surrendered fully to Krishna, and Krishna from within inspired him how he could accomplish both.
Okay, to the text 53 and 54 or something.
Yeah.
Where he's bringing
brought them both together and set it on his lap.
And one more thing.
Yep.
Is a question I have for a long time, I was just asking. Is that, are we to understand, are these the exact, is this the exact, like when Arjuna is offering prayers to Krishna? I mean, was he speaking of poetry, you know, from Sanskrit verse? You know what I'm saying? Because that's the way the whole Bhagavatam.
Well, this is something like, it's not the same question, but it's something like Mother Kalamini's question. In other words, not only was it poetry, was it these exact words? You know, did somebody have a tape recorder there?
Well, okay.
So, and then just do it, you know, transcribe it?
So it was more of just like a gist.
That's Sariputta's opinion.
What was
it? The Jiva Goswami.
It doesn't contradict Jiva Goswami.
Then why wasn't the entire Bhagavatam poeticized? Because there are, although the majority of it is poetry,
yeah,
there are significant portions that aren't also.
So there's some transcendental reason for that.
I'm just saying that if it wasn't poetry, spoken as poetry, and it was poeticized, then why not the whole thing poeticized? Why just certain sections? In other words, I'm saying that maybe they actually did all speak in poetry.
Yeah, quite possibly, but I don't have the answer to that. You know, why it is in the fifth canto many verses are not, that's one principal place why they're not poeticized. Whoever wrote all this down certainly could have put those portions of the fifth canto into meter and so on. Why they didn't. It's not only conversation that's in meter. Or that portion isn't. Kila.
Just when you were talking about verse 25, it's interesting how Arjuna reminds Krishna of the cause of his incarnation in reference to his request for him to help him in his service. So it's also not out of line for us in the course of our service to specifically request the Lord to help us to perform our duty, to perform especially in the mission of what you're talking about. Actually, it's just interesting how Arjuna personally asks Krishna to help.
That's appreciation. Arjuna Prabhu.
Well, I was telling a flashback to Maria's question. Isn't it because last events, they are like the immediate background to the birth of Parikshit Maharaj?
These last events are?
Are immediately related to the birth of Parikshit Maharaj.
Oh, certainly.
And then I was linking that with a question that the sages made a few chapters back, which is, how come this opulent prince is abandoning, he's wanting to leave his body if he has a need for shelter, all these living entities?
Okay. And the conclusion is?
So then it would be implied that this the narration starts here because it's actually an answering. So Shukadeva Goswami just answered the question about the speaker, Shukadeva Goswami, and now he's heading back to the question on the hearer, Parikshit Maharaj, and the question a few chapters back on why this personality is so opulent is not
okay.
Leave his body.
Does everybody catch that?
No.
Okay, I'll repeat it a little differently and then add something to it. Previously, we heard the question asked by the sages, why did Maharaj Parikshit give up his life when he was cursed? He could have done so many things, he was so powerful, why did he just go along with it? So many people were taking shelter of him as the king. His very body was their shelter, and he gave up his body willingly. Why did he do that? So Arjuna is suggesting, we're now going to hear an answer to that question. clear? Then another point is, I'll tell you afterwards. I'll tell you afterwards. Because there's time is already over. So the other thing is, in relation to this Krishna Katha question, why is it that right after Vyasadeva's narration, he's starting to talk about the Pandavas? It's like, but the answer is, this is the beginning of the request, this question 6, the last verse in chapter 2, excuse me, chapter 1. No, anyways, please narrate the pastimes. It's text 13 of chapter 1. Please narrate the pastimes. So he's doing that. Pastimes of Krishna. But it's in the form of the activities of the Pandavas. And therefore the question arises, what's going on? The activities of the Pandavas. We want to hear Krishna Katha. And the answer is no. The activities of the Pandavas is also Krishna Katha. The hearing, this is very important for the Bhagavatam's message, overall understanding. Hearing about the activities of great devotees is Krishna Katha. Because they're in relation to Krishna. It's very much tied in also with the reference of Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya from this morning's class. Great service is done by hearing from the person Bhagavat on the topics of Bhagavat. Because when you're in association with the Pandavas, you're going to hear about Krishna. Because they're in relation to Krishna. They don't have any reason for existing outside of Krishna. When Krishna leaves the world, they also leave the world. They have no reason for existing other than in relation to Krishna. Hearing topics about, so just to repeat it, hearing topics about Krishna's devotee is Krishna Katha. It's answering, this section is answering the question, please narrate the topics of the personality of Godhead and his various incarnations. Okay. We'll do a little session afterwards. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Not bad, huh? So for homework, review the book. Be ready when I ask you questions, and your notes also. Be ready when I ask you questions, and standing here at the chalkboard, that you'll volunteer answers that I can just write down. And then you can put them down in your notebook and know everything.